Hi, I'm Steve Todd, and you're listening to Musicians FAQ, a radio program focused on learning more about the musicians that are entertaining you around Waterloo Region. We're featuring your favorite local singer, guitar player, or drummer, learning how they got started, influences, funny stories about past gigs, and upcoming performances. You'll also hear some great recordings of their work. In addition, we'll be learning about others in the music industry that are helping to maintain a vibrant music scene. This is Musicians FAQ. Good morning, it's Steve Todd. I want to thank you for tuning in to Musicians FAQ. Today in the program, we're featuring singer, songwriter, guitarist Stuart McKee, as well as hearing some of his recent recordings. We're going to learn about how he has collaborated with many other singers, musicians, and other professionals in our musical community to push his recordings over the finish line. Stuart reminds me of a hockey coach that builds a strong team and puts the right skill set of players on the ice in order to win the game. He's taken the time to find the talented players with fresh ideas and no egos, and used Fred Smith's studio to piece it all together. I think you're in for a real treat over the next hour. Let's start the hour by going back in time with Stuart McKee as he recalls the early years learning to play guitar.
You know, I was lucky. I had one of those houses where there was just always a lot of music going on. I mean, both of my parents were very into music. You know, my dad had played in a bugle band and things like that when he was a kid in high school. Yeah. You know, my dad never really became an adept musician, although he always tried. I mean, he got into bagpipes years later than my sister. But my mom was classically trained on piano. So, I mean, she was always, you know, the piano was upstairs at that point when we were kids, and I was always begging her to play us stuff on the piano. And, you know, the radio was always on. My mom was an early riser, so she was the first one up, and the radio was always on every morning. And usually then it was AM radio. But even then, you know, I mean, there were so many great songs. I was, you know, a very small child in the 60s, and I think a lot of that stuff stayed with me subconsciously. And then it was really kind of the 70s music that I sort of became really aware of. The Stones, Angie, Billy, Don't Lose That Number, The Night Chicago Died, you know, Bowie, Fame, you know, Stevie Wonder was big, Sunshine of My Life, I think was, you know, one of my faves. I was always singing that around the house, you know, like most people, a big Beatles fan, you know, it was great. So my mom tried to teach me the piano a little bit. It didn't really take, and I think I was too young for the discipline and the practicing, and maybe my fingers were too small, and I got frustrated easily, and he got frustrated trying to teach me. I mean, he taught my sister Catherine to play, and she kind of stuck with it, but I kind of abandoned that part of it early. But I was always singing and listening to music. My parents, both parents were into jazz and big band.
Oh, great. Okay.
You know, and we found some common ground in some of the country stuff. We were all big fans of Johnny Cash. It was one of the first records we had in the house when we bought a real stereo. Elvis, Frank Sinatra, and then the Beatles were kind of where it all crossed over for us. So, you know, my mom's favorite song was Long and Winding Road. So there was a lot of great stuff going on all the time. I remember having a little plastic guitar, a little cheapy guitar that I was always hanging around on. I don't know if it was a Doug Dietrich or somebody you had interviewed a couple weeks ago, and they're talking about the conservatory coming door to door.
Yeah, a few people said that.
And that's kind of how it started for me. I mean, they came by, and I'm, you know, I think I was around grade six, and I was thinking my parents, you know, I want to take guitar lessons. And, you know, they did the assessment. They came in and kind of go through the thing on the accordion, and they kind of see what song or what kind of instrument you have the aptitude for. And they said, yeah, he would be good for the guitar. And so I was excited. I was going to start taking guitar lessons. And my buddy next door, he did the same thing. They told him he'd be perfect for the accordion, which he hated because we both wanted to play guitar, but his dad loved it. His dad was from Newfoundland, and he was very much into the old folk music, and, you know, so he loved it. That was kind of our, you know, our first thing. Once we got into it, he started taking accordion lessons. I started taking guitar lessons. We'd get together and try to jam a little bit and things like that. I mean, I never got too far. I think I got grade one or two in the conservatory. Again, I mean, being a kid, my parents were great with saying, hey, you know, we'll pay for the lessons. And they got me an acoustic guitar, even though I wanted an electric guitar. My dad thought it'd be better to have the acoustic guitar that you can kind of around house parties and to the beach. And, you know, at the time, I don't know if he just was trying to save the money. I think probably it made sense, or maybe he didn't want the noise of an amp and an electric guitar in the house yet. You know, so the acoustic was great. But I think for me, you know, I had to get myself downtown and get the lessons. And I think my biggest thing was that the discipline, go through the scales and all the practicing, I would get distracted and I'd come up with sounds and ideas. And I was writing songs right from the start. I mean, I was writing songs for the grade 7 and 8 and just playing things on a little cassette player. And then, you know, I kind of discovered how I could play it on one cassette player and then play along to it and record it on another cassette player so I could get some double tracking going on and things like that. So that was kind of my big focus. I mean, you know, everybody and his brother playing lead guitar, so I didn't focus as much on trying to become, you know, a really virtuoso kind of musician, but I was really obsessed with songwriting and creating songs and writing lyrics and melodies and things like that. So, yeah. And that carried on all through high school. You know, I think sort of my sort of foray into the business was, you know, with Major Hoople's. And I roadied for them way, way back. I was about 18, 19. And that's where I first met Grant Haywood. And, you know, I was roading and then I was doing lights and driving all over Southern Ontario with them 3 nights a week on the weekend, which was great. And then working in a restaurant during the week, you know, it was fun. I mean, for a guy at 19 years old and you're going around and they had a pretty good following. I mean, Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights, we might be playing, you know, Nolan Sound or Durham or Concordon or wherever. And generally it was always sold out and there's a lot of people. So it was kind of that excitement of, and they put on a pretty big show. I mean, they had the full lights and sound and everybody was dressed up on stage and, you know, there was some connections with some songs. David Lodge had co-written the English lyrics for that Pete Shelley song, Major Tom. The album came out and they had some local radio airplay with some of the songs that Grant and Rocky had written. So it was pretty exciting time at that time for a young kid. And then during the week, I worked in the office as well with David handling bookings and things like that and going with him to recording sessions. I remember going to a session at Comfort Sound in Toronto and Rick Hutt was the session keyboard player for that particular session. We're going back, you know, 30 plus years type of thing, but there was a lot of that going around and just kind of going to meetings and things during the week and being part of all that was really, really exciting. Got the juices flowing with me. So one of the guys in the band, Jack Calendarian, the keyboard player, him and his brother Arpo at Arpo's Dugout, a sports bar downtown. So yeah. I was working there as their kitchen manager. And then I was out with the band on the weekend as well. And then I was working in Dave's office as well part-time. So I had quite a bit going on at that point in my life. I thought, I'm never going back to school. I mean, I've got it all made here. I've got a career in restaurants. I got a career in music. And I was just having a lot of fun. There was a lot of overlap with the music there too, because I mean, in restaurants, we'd have bands playing on the patio and I was always the guy who was booking the bands and sourcing out entertainment locally. Everything sort of touched on music. And at the same time, a friend of mine, Jamie Schneider and I, we put together, we got a little recording space downtown, a little rehearsal space and started putting our own band together. And then eventually got our own little studio going. We had 16 track recording, you know, the half inch tape. And we were doing a lot of recording for ourselves and trying to get local bands in to record. That just sort of carried on. So him and I had worked together for several years. We were under the Music Shack. Yeah, I think at some point we had sort of bounced around. We had a warehouse downtown off Park Street. They kept jacking up the rent or they wanted to convert it into condos or rezone it or something. So we got bounced out of there and we ended up getting, there's a little shack, I guess, for lack of a better word, behind his property at his parents' place. So we moved everything into there. And at that point, that's when we decided to kind of get the business cards and try to make it go and get people in and things like that. And so Music Shack was kind of born out of that. We bounced around to different locations. We were in my parents' basement when we started to really too loud and annoy his mother. She kicked us out. And then we'd go over to my parents. And then we got back into, we got a space out on Colby Drive in Waterloo. So it was something I think we had going on for about 10 years or so.
Great, good for you.
Yeah, and I mean, it was part-time. We had some different bands in and things like that. Really, it was just more for ourselves and recording our own songs and things like that.
Let's take a listen to one of Stewart's originals called Blue Eyes in the Morning, recorded at Fred Smith Studio in Kitchener. Stewart has taken care of the lead vocals, and later in the program, you'll learn how he turned this song into a duet with C.J. Cooper. For this recording, Grant Haywood is on drums, Fred Smith is covering bass and acoustic guitar, and Mike Weber is playing that beautiful pedal steel guitar.
Blue eyes in the morning, tears that fall like rain, wearing out my welcome, but here I am again. begging for forgiveness, promising to change. Sorry that I caused you so much pain. Living with regrets, trying to hide the shame. Memories forget just who it was to blame. The days are growing shorter and time just moves too fast, and everything reminds me of the past. And there's a storm that's blowing out of here this morning. There's a million places I should probably be, but I'm not leaving despite of all the warning, because I still love you and you still love me.
Listening to Musicians FAQ on 102.7 CKMS. Let's get back to our interview with Stuart McKee.
I was general manager of O'Toole's restaurant out on Manitou, Fairway in Manitou.
Okay.
And we had an opportunity, I pitched to the owner about doing a weekly jam night. And he said, hey, that's great. You know, do you know any bands or anybody who can get kind of as a house band? Once I laid out the whole idea for him, you know, at that point I said, well, we can probably do it ourselves. So we became weekly house band and did a Sunday night jam for a few years out there. That was a real blast. I mean, and it was a great way to sort of, you know, we would mostly do cover songs, but we'd sneak in some original songs every week where we could. And Jamie and I are writing together and we were writing on our own. And, you know, a lot of the local musicians at the time were coming out. You know, we had people coming out from the other bars when those bars would close down. And I think it was right around the time that Blackwater Draw had a Sunday night jam going on down at Casey's in Waterloo.
I remember that.
Yeah, so we had those guys coming up after they closed, and occasionally they would sub in for us or we'd sub in for them. You know, Ed Waba and his band, The Nuts, were playing around as well. And so it became sort of an interchangeable different musicians. I mean, if somebody was sick or out of the band or had moved on, you know, somebody from a different band would come in and sub in. And so it was a pretty good revolving door. I mean, the constants through the whole thing were Jamie and I, but we had different singers and different guitar players and different bass players and drummers.
And you said this was Sunday night then? You ran this?
Yeah, this was Sunday night. And
The good thing about that is most musicians are home because they're not playing. So that's why you're getting such a great pool of talent coming out to see, like to go to the evening.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had Jamie Warren and Jason Berry coming out, and you know, John Lee from Mel Brown's band, and Sandy McDonald and his wife Kim, and
really
lots of different people popping in. And of course, a lot of bands were hungry, looking for a gig. So, also, what would happen is would come in and hang out and check out the scene type of thing, and sort of ask questions. And me being the general manager as well, say, hey, you know, I mean, if there's any a night you guys aren't actually playing, let us know. You know, we'd love to fill in. So it was a way to really help out other bands as well. If we were taking a week off or a couple of weeks off.
Yeah, for sure.
We'd bring in another band to sort of sub and host, and just to change it up too. Because, I mean, people kind of get tired of seeing the same band week after week after week. I mean, it's sort of the double-edged sword. I think consistency is what you need to kind of draw people in. But I think keep it fresh sometimes. You know, they want to see different faces, hear different music, and bring in a different crowd. I think you get to the point where we had sort of our set crowd, and we usually had a pretty good crowd every Sunday night. You know, it was nice to bring in another band and kind of bring in their crowd along with it and open the whole thing. Anywhere that I've worked, I've always tried to incorporate as much music as I could into the whole thing.
Good for you. Okay, that's great. When? How many years ago was this then?
Well, this would have been early 90s. I was there sort of 91, 92, 93, I think. We're going back a bit. And then, you know, I'd moved back on to Kelsey's, and I had played in a couple different bands along the way. I got involved with Paul Redman and the Dutch Uncles. He was putting together a CD. So him and I worked on some songs. He had a studio as well. And I had a couple of co-writes on his first CD with his band. They had released a cassette prior that year, and then he wanted to put out a CD. So, and we recorded that up at Jay Reel's studio. And that was another guy, you know, over the years, he's got a connection back with Grant and different people that I knew, but we had worked together with Jay at his, I think somewhere out sort of Stratford or sort of between Kitchener and Stratford. He's got a studio and we played Breakfast Television.
How'd you end up doing Breakfast Television?
Well, that's something that Paul just made the call, I guess. I mean, he was really working it as far as trying to get the band connections. And actually, one of the managers that I worked with at O'Toole's had worked at the local radio station as well. And I can't remember if it was your station or one of the other local stations, but he came out and did an interview. And then KW Record was doing that weekly write-up on independent bands as well. So we got an interview from them, and I've still got the picture from that interview on our wall and the clip from the KW Record. So that was kind of cool. So we had, you know, at that point, we felt like we had a lot going on. We'd sold about 3,000 copies of the CD locally and throughout 10 gigs, and we were opening for bands like the Mahones and different bands like that. Sometimes, but there's live music going on all over town, it seemed, at that point. There's a lot of venues that were booking bands, so we were getting gigs, opening for other bands on off nights from doing the jam night at the pools, and it was the same thing with Paul's band with the Dutch Uncles. And so we were trying to get out there as much as possible. We did the Breakfast Television. We got the write-up on the KW Record, and we got some radio airplay on the local stations, and we were selling the CDs. And, you know, and as all things do, I mean, breakups start happening, and the friction starts happening, and everybody decides they kind of want to do something else. And
yeah, that's a shame, eh?
Yeah. So, I mean, I got out of it really kind of completely at that point. I moved out west with Kelsey's Restaurant. I got an opportunity to open restaurants out west with them. We moved out to British Columbia for 4 years, and I really kind of got rid of everything. I sort of, Jamie and I kind of parted ways with the studio, and I sold out all the equipment back to him. Paul and I parted ways with the band, and really the only thing I kept was my acoustic guitar. And I continued to write songs and continued to play on my own, but I hadn't really played with anybody, jam nights or open mics or in any kind of band environment for the whole 4 years that I was out there. And then, you know, we came back. I was working in Guelph. I got talking. I was out at Manhattan Music Club one night and got talking to a fellow there. And he mentioned that he had a recording studio. So we did a little trade. I gave him a couple gift certificates for the restaurant to check it out because he'd never been in. And gave me a couple free sessions at the studio. So I started getting back into recording and really started getting excited about writing. And at that point, that's when it kind of really stuck. I thought, you know, I'm always going to do this, whether it's full-time, part-time. It really kind of stuck at that point, and it continued on. I got very involved with a lot of corporate roles over the next 10 or 15 years and got in some management positions and was doing a lot of traveling with work. So it was always really more of a part-time thing, but I was always getting out to see bands as often as I could, you know, working with other musicians as often as I could. And it was a restructure a couple of years back. I was working for a national company. It's the choice of moving out west again or taking a package. So I decided to take the package. And during that time, I really had about a year off. And I started working at the Boathouse in Victoria Park as a server. Yep. You know, and I was probably the oldest server they'd ever had there. You know, most of the staff were in their early 20s and late teens. And I am in my early 50s. And I was serving there, but I was loving it. It was every day was out in the patio, beautiful weather at night. There was live music every single night. Yeah, just great. And Mike McDonald's jam every Sunday. And that really got the fever going again. And during that hiatus, I set up recording equipment at home and started buying guitars. And, you know, once you get into that thing, you just never stop. And at some point during all that, I decided I'm going to actually do this, get a whole CD's worth of material of my own stuff. And went online. I mean, in the old days, you'd got the yellow pages. I mean, I went online and looked up local studios, and Fred Smith was the first one I came across, and I gave him a call, and we had a good chat, and I came down to meet him, and we just hit it off right away. So
yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah, so I started recording there with Fred, and initially I wanted to play guitar and everything. I wasn't overly confident about my singing, but Fred was very encouraging about that. So it was me singing and playing guitar, and then he said, you know, it'd be really great to have live drums on some of these songs. You know anybody? So I called up Grant, and Grant said, sure, I'd love to help out. And he came down and started playing drums. And he's a professional musician. He's been around for a long time. He's done all kinds of music. Most of the stuff I was doing was either very country tinged or very blues tinged. So it's kind of country rock or blues rock. Really could have divided the CD down the middle and had half the CD could have been country songs and half the CD could have been blues or rock. So I talked him into singing on a couple of the tracks. And Fred's like, oh, you sure you want to do that? And, you know, my wife and I have been listening to it. We really love your voice on these songs. It really sounds authentic. I mean, you wrote the songs. You should be the singer. So for me, it was going through, as we started to write songs and record songs, to figure out which ones I was comfortable singing, which ones I could see a different singer on. We got the first three songs done. And at that point, Grant suggested that him and I write together. So Grant and I started writing songs together. And I think this point we've written about six or seven songs, and one of those songs is actually on the CD. It was I think one of the songs you played on one of the earlier shows, Homebody. So that was the first song that him and I wrote together. We've continued on since then, and it's been all over. I mean, I think Grant talked about this a little bit on the show, where gets pigeonholed as being a country person or being this or that because he's got the history with his family and his dad's band. Really is all kinds of music, and I'm the same way. I mean, we're influenced by jazz and flamenco music and classic rock and blues and country and everything. So it's a real sort of stew of and a mix of different sounds and styles.
I'm a homebody, not a rolling stone. I've got all everything I own. My old Ford truck still gets me around. Eight-track tape has got the same old sound. Worked the same damn job for 45 years. Just a good old boy drinking moonshine beer. I'm a homebody, not a rolling stone. I've got all I thing I own. Well, I've been a few places, not too far, picking Hank Haggard on my old guitar. Women come, women go, I won't change, that's all I know. I'm a homebody, not a rolling stone. I got a CB and an old flip phone. That's right. Some people say that I'm not cool, but there ain't no shame being old school. I'm a homebody, not a rolling stone. I got all I need, everything I own. Yeah, I'm a homebody, not a rolling stone. You can have Mick Jagger, give me all George Jones. Take me home.
Hi, I'm Grant Haywood from Wellesley, Ontario, and you're listening to 102.7 CKMS Radio, Waterloo.ca.
So as I got going through it, I started bringing in other musicians, and Chris Dahmer, a keyboard player, was a pretty constant throughout the CD. We did have John Lee playing a few tracks, and Mike Weaver came in and played some steel guitar. And then I wrote a song that was sort of out of the norm for me a little bit and had more of a pop R&B vibe to it, more of a 60s, 70s vibe to it. And I thought, boy, I could really hear some horns on here. And Fred had suggested Ray Podhornick, and I'd known Ray from way back. We'd actually worked together at Unora in high school during the plant shutdown and met each other then. And, of course, he played in the Lulu's band, and I knew him over the years, and he would come into different bars that I was working at, and we socialized that way as well. And I hadn't really seen Ray in quite a few years, so I was excited to get him in, and he brought in Dave Whiffen, and the two of them did some horn tracks on one of the tunes. And then there was another song that I really thought, you know, I don't really have anything of value to add to the guitar as far as what I'm doing. It's just going to be a kind of a generic solo if I play it. And, you know, a lot of the songs I had crafted some solos that I was fairly proud of. But in this particular one, I was kind of stumped. I thought, I'm not doing anything unique or original. So I called John McKinley, and he came in and just played some great licks on a tune called Another Roll of the Dice. And this was a song that I'd actually written about 30 years ago, and we'd actually done it. Okay. And one of the O'Toole's bands with Jamie and I, with Dave Emmerich playing lead guitar, and different people had been in the band over the years. So it was great to bring that song back. And Cheryl Lescom was another one that came in. Her and Hills actually duetted on one of the songs that I did. And then I brought Cheryl back in to do another song. And, I mean, she just kicked butt on that one. So it was really exciting. And as we moved on, Grant was quite busy with a lot of live shows and different things that he was doing. And during the shutdown and different things, it made it really hard to sort of get different people in. But as we came back out of that shutdown, I think Grant was on the road, so he brought in Jimmy Boudreau and Steve Hogg. Fred had been playing most of the bass up until this point, so we thought it'd be kind of nice to have couple guys playing live. And we recorded some of the tracks that way with Steve Hogg and Jimmy Boudreau. Playing live off the floor to lay down the bed tracks. And then I got very involved in a lot of songwriting groups and things like that during the shutdown, because there really wasn't anything else to do. So there's a lot of these online songwriting groups. I got involved with something with Andrew Allen and another one with Rob Wells. And then I went to Song Studio for a week, and that was a great experience. You got to pitch your songs directly to people like Rick Emmett and Patricia Conroy and people like that. Steve Earle was the keynote speaker. So through that, you know, the common denominator seemed to really be co-writing, networking with other musicians, and really trying to write and co-write with people instead of shooting for the top and kind of getting your songs out there for the top artists, really start working with a lot of other independent artists and a lot of up-and-coming artists. So I started doing quite a bit of that, co-writing with different people. And then I, through one of those songwriting courses, introduced me to a lady out of Guelph named CJ Cooper, who is an independent singer-songwriter artist as well. So I thought she would just be perfect for a few of the songs that I was doing. And they were more of a country flavor. She was doing more of a pop vibe at the moment. She's got a new CD coming out as well in the fall. But we brought her in, and she just knocked it out of the park. I mean, just sounded great. Her and I...
I noticed on her... I don't know if it's on Spotify, but she does a duet. Is it with yourself doing Blue Eyes in the Morning?
That's right. Yeah. So Blue Eyes was one of the early tracks that I had released. It was one of the first ones I'd released on Spotify, with just me singing it. And that was an interesting track because it was one of the ones I actually don't even play on that track. And I had initially laid down some electric guitar rhythm parts, and I was going to do some lead parts. And it really was starting to take on a different direction, and it wasn't getting the vibe. I was trying to do some country licks and things like that. And somebody suggested getting a steel player in. So when we brought in Mike Weaver, he played for us, and it was just beautiful. And I said, you know, let's take everything off and let's just hear him. I don't want any electric guitar on that at all. And then Fred had been doing some really nice finger picking in the studio that day. I said, well, why don't you do the acoustic part? So Fred did the acoustic part, and Mike Weaver did the steel guitar. Okay, and then I did the lead vocal.
Yeah.
Well, that one got released last summer. I through Song Studio, I had always wanted to do that song as a duet. And I felt something was kind of lacking in the chorus, and some of the feedback I got pointed to that direction as well. So I ended up reworking the song as a duet and reworking the chorus. And I called CJ up and she came in, and I thought right away, I mean, our voices blended well together, and I think she elevated the song and elevated my performance as well. So that was really exciting to have her come in and do that.
Blue eyes in the morning, tears that fall like rain, wearing out my welcome, but here I am again, begging for forgiveness, promising to change. Sorry that I caused you so much pain.
Living with regrets, trying to hide the shame. Memories forget, just who it was to blame. The years are growing shorter, and time just moves too fast. And everything reminds me of the past. And there's a storm morning, and there's a million places I should probably be, but I'm not leaving despite of all the warning. I still love your blue eyes in the morning.
One thing I learned after speaking with Stuart for this interview was how he was musically influenced by his brother Rob. Stuart was younger than Rob, and because he was not old enough to go on his own, Rob would take him along to local record stores, which helped introduce Stuart to a lot of different styles of music. Both Stuart's love of music and motivation to keep practicing his guitar benefited from his brother's influence. Stuart recalls asking for the latest Kiss album for his 13th birthday, and instead his brother Rob gave him an LP of the progressive rock band Emerson, Lake & Palmer. You can hear the many styles of music that Stuart was influenced by during this hour, such as in the next segment of this program, when Stuart McKee discusses one of his newer recordings, Prisoners of the Heart.
Yeah, so that was the one sort of had that different vibe, and that was the one we brought everybody in. That's Ray and Dave Whiffen in the horn section, and Cheryl Lescom and Hills Walter are duetting on that one. I do play the guitar on that one. I play all the electric guitars on that one. And I think Grant was playing the drums on that one, and Fred was probably playing the bass on that.
And then Chris Dahmer on keyboards again.
It was recorded a while back, but I just hadn't had a chance to really do much with it. And that was one I had pitched during Song Studio as well. And Fred at that point had just done horns on his keyboard, but everybody had commented they love the horns and they love the fact that we're using live musicians on the track and things like that. So I thought, let's go back and look at that one and see how we can really, you know, spice it up. We brought in the live horn players and that made a world of difference already. And then bringing in a couple of R&B singers to really work that duet magic together was great. So yeah, I'm really pleased with the way that one came out.
Let's take a listen to the song Stuart was just talking about, called Prisoners of the Heart. This one features Sarah Lescom and Hills Walter on vocals, and a really cool horn section featuring Dave Whiffen and Ray Podhornick. As I mentioned at the start of the show, Stuart has surrounded himself with a diverse group of talented musicians and professionals in the industry, and this song is a great example of what can be accomplished with everyone working together with a common goal.
A long, long time, and there's no limits to my madness. Been fooling me for way too long. Time to release myself from sadness. 'Cause both of us are changing. A time to make a new start. Don't let the love and fear make us prisoners of the heart. Prisoners of the heart. I keep leaving you, but I can't go. I guess I'll suffer through your madness. You've been blaming me, but we both know I'm not that reason for your sadness. Yeah, we both are changing. Oh, but we could make a new start.
You even have some artwork for that too, I think, right? You have a nice photo. I don't know if you took that yourself or you've just found that online, the nice pictures of all the locks and everything.
Right. Yeah. So I've got my music's being distributed through SpinUp, which is sort of a site that's set up for independent artists. It's sponsored by Universal Music, and they give you a website. They distribute your music to Apple and Deezer and Spotify. And they introduce you to some online places. Canva, I think, is one of them. Pexels and different places where you can sort of go in and find suitable clips that you want to use. And it's all royalty free. You know, you have an opportunity to recognize the artist or just to make a donation and things like that. It makes it really easy for quick sort of releases for people that don't have photography capabilities and things like that. So we just wanted a quick cover photo for each of the releases. That was the best way to do it. There's some really great stuff out there.
Yeah. Well, even the old truck, I think you have an old 1940s Ford or something, a nice old blue truck on Homebody. That kind of drew me in right there, just looking at this great looking truck.
Yeah, I think that makes all the difference. I mean, it's really key to have that perfect picture to really sum it up. And I thought that was great with that one. And I think all of them tried to have sort of a reflection of what the mood was of the songs, or maybe some lyric references in the songs, with the newest ones, with the remake, with Blue Eyes and Hardest Part, which is actually a song that I co-wrote with Evelina Rowley, who I used to actually work with. And it was funny, my last day on the job, I went down to visit one of our out-of-town locations. I was running a couple of entertainment venues, and I was just chatting with her and found out that she's into music, and she had gone to school. I think she'd gone to Humber, and we got chatting about that. And about out of the blue, a couple of months later, I got a Facebook friend request from her. So I sent her some lyrics, and she put them to music, and we started co-writing. And then she played me a song that she had written. And then out of the blue, she just said, you know, here's a new chord progression. And she sent me this message, and it said, F, D minor, B flat, C seventh. And that was it. And I said, well, you know, what time signature, what tempo? She goes, I'm not sure yet. There was no music, nothing at all. Wow. So I just sat down with the acoustic guitar and started playing around with those chords. And I love the chords. And I wrote the first verse, and I sent it to her, and she's like, I love it. And by the time she'd responded to that, I'd written the chorus. And then, you know, I played around with the chords a little bit and added a rundown on the F and added a G chord. And by, you know, 20 minutes later, I had a complete song.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, so it's kind of neat the way these things just come about. And you just don't know. Sometimes you're not in the room together. Sometimes it's a lyric or something that triggers it.
Let's take a listen to Hardest Part, co-written with Evelina Rowley and featuring CJ Cooper on vocals. Stuart is on acoustic, electric, and piano. Steve Hogg is playing the bass. Jimmy Boudreau is on drums. And Nathan Smith of the Barrel Boys is playing the fiddle. Hardest Part was recorded at Fred Smith Studios.
I guess it wasn't that hard for you to lay down my heart. Walk away while I fall apart. I'm left behind with pieces to find. I don't know if I can find them.
One of the early songs that I did, Dancing on Sunshine, I was walking downtown with my son Mason, And it was just a nice February day. The sun was shining, the snow was melting. And, you know, I mentioned something about it. It's so beautiful. And we were just kind of walking along, almost skipping. You know, he was probably 8 years old at the time. And he said, yeah, we're dancing on sunshine, Papa. And I went, wow, that's a great. So I immediately, you know, turned on the voice note recorder in my phone and just really kind of started singing it into the phone. I came up with the opening lines right there on the spot. And then I got home and I wrote the whole song again in about 20 minutes. So sometimes when you find the inspiration, they just come out right away. And other times it's pulling teeth. But
yeah. And you have a little video for that. I think I've seen that on YouTube of, I think you're in Fred Smith's backyard, aren't you?
Yeah, we decided to enter that, and there was a song contest at one of the radio stations, Ontario radio stations, and we decided to put that together. Initially, we had kind of a big concept video worked out, and then I kept reading the fine print, and it said performance video, and we were trying to get some information from the radio station about exactly what they're looking for, so we decided just to do a live performance video off the back. Now, when I looked at a lot of submissions eventually, and there's probably over 1,000 of them sent in, a lot of them were pretty elaborate and they weren't all live performance, and a lot of them were lip synced and a lot of them were concept videos and things like that. So we thought, oh, well, I guess, you know, and so we didn't get any honorable mention or anything for that, but it was just a lot of fun doing it. Yeah. And we got a lot of great feedback and a lot of views on it.
It's a great tune too. Like, it's a real, you feel like dancing a bit when you hear it and everything too. So it's a great song.
Well, good. Thank you.
Do you have the CD pretty much done, or are you still finishing off a few more songs?
It's done. I mean, I could have kept going on and on and on. As I said, there was a lot of split between sort of country songs and blues songs. And at one point, Fred said, why don't you just do two CDs? And I thought about that. And then eventually with the shutdown looming again, I thought, I just want to get this done. I want to get something out. And we'll work on a new CD in the springtime or in the new year as the climate sort of permits. And he's... and I are just working on sort of final mixes and ideas right now. So all the music's done, all the vocals are done. Now it's really just a matter of, you know, how do we want to mix this one? If there's any final harmonies, Fred and his wife, who both sing very well, will put those on for us. So Fred's been great. I mean, not only is he's got a great studio and a great business there, and he's a professional musician. Anything with strings he plays incredibly well. He's played mostly bass on the record, I said, in the one song that he did acoustic, but he's also done some great harmony vocals, great arrangements and things like that. So we've co-produced the whole CD together. He's a great engineer and great musician, just a lot of great ideas and just a real positive person to be with. And Grant's been the same way. I mean, really, as I said initially, it was just the three of us, Fred and Grant and I, working, and it was really, really very easy working relationship. These guys, I mean, they've been professional musicians. They've been doing this as a living for their whole lives, and there was no egos. It was nothing but support and positive energy. And I find that with a lot of people that come in too. I mean, you're hiring some of these people that you've been seeing play live for years. Carol Eskom, we used to go see her play out at Grand Bend years ago, and always a big, big fan. So it was pretty exciting to actually have her in the studio, and really just, again, no ego. I've got some ideas for the song. What do you think? And she had some great ideas. She came in really prepared. Hills had some great ideas. He came in really prepared. And at the end of the day, everybody just wants the song to sound good, whether it's John or Mike Weaver. You know, they do 4, 5, 6, or 7 takes, as many as you wanted. Hey, can we try this? Sure, let's try this. And whatever you want. And it was just beautiful. You know, Ray and Dave were the same way. So it almost becomes too much, because now you've got 6 or 7 different versions of a solo or a horn part or a vocal, and you go, wow, I mean, there's so much to choose from. Well, that was a big part with Fred and I, was just sifting through it, then, you know, which one fits the song, which one really serves the song, and that's how a lot of it came. Fred ended up doing a guitar solo on one of the last songs that we recorded. I wasn't happy with anything that I was putting down, and he tried a bunch of different things, and some of them are pretty intricate and pretty elaborate, and some great country licks. And the one we settled on was a fairly simple sort of variation on some transition chords and things like that. Again, it just worked beautifully. So that's what's amazing to me, is that people really know how to put their best foot forward and give you everything you want, give the song that it needs. And it's pretty exciting for me.
I've been dancing on sunshine, living on cheap wine. Wanted a lover who won't blow. after week since I've been living with you. You get me so high, I don't wanna come down. Yeah, I'm touching the sky. You must be leading me on. I never felt like this before. I'm feeling 10 feet tall. If it's a dream, then don't wake me. Just let me enjoy a little more. With you, I'm not lonely. Girl, you're the only one. You're always making me smile. And late in the evening, after the chores are done, we'll have some fun for a while. I'm always running, going, coming. But your love is making me stay. I could break free, but I'd rather be holding you tightly each day. You get me so high, I don't wanna come down. Yeah, I'm touching the sky. You must be leading me on. I never felt like this before. I'm feeling 10 feet tall. If it's a dream, then don't wake me. Just let me enjoy a little more. Time ago, you only get one chance to show what you need and what you know. So hold on tight and don't let go. You get me so high, I don't wanna come down. Touching the sky, you must be leading me on. I never felt like this before. I'm feeling 10 feet tall. If it's a dream, then don't wake me. Just let me enjoy a little more.
I don't see myself as a performing artist. I'm not a singer-songwriter. I consider myself more of a songwriter, although I probably will start to get out there. Ben, I've been doing some stuff where I'm in the lead vocal. I just did a Christmas collaboration with Evelina where we did a video of Little Drummer's Boy. And I felt kind of naked. It was just me sort of singing, her playing piano. So I'm getting more comfortable with that. But it's really... Me, I like more behind the scenes. I love being in the studio. I love writing. I love recording. I love mixing. I love arranging. And I love trying to figure out who would be the best singer for that, or who'd be the best guitar player, who'd be the best horn player for that, and what can we add to the song. At the end of the day, I think Fred and I finally got to the point where we've been working on this for a couple of years, and I'd been working full-time through half of it. So I finally said, let's just get it done. We've got 14 songs. A sort of the bonus track with Blue Eyes being on there twice. Hopefully mid-January, we should have the whole CD completely mixed and ready for release.
I don't know if I asked you this already, but I think I seen on Facebook, you're doing a collaboration with Sarah Sakal and Tanya Nye.
Well, Sarah put out there, she's doing a collaboration. She's doing two collaborations. So Sarah's actually doing the collaboration with Tanya Nye. Yeah. And I'm doing a collaboration with Sarah. So Sarah and I have been working on a blues tune together. She's doing a blues album, and she's already got some tracks recorded for it and written. And her and I have been working on a song, and we've been flip-flopping whether we want it more as a slow blues tune or more of a sort of funky up tune. So we've done a couple different versions, but we're getting together this week, and I think she's finally sort of tapped into how she wants to present it on the CD. So we'll do the final arrangement this week, and then she'll get to recording that hopefully over the next week or two. Yeah, there's a couple other people. There's actually Tanya Joy, who I've been co-writing with, and I did a co-write with David Madras, who's been writing a lot now with Jesse T. They just did a great Christmas release a few weeks ago. I've been working as well with various other songwriters. Primarily, it's still kind of writing on my own. You know, every couple of weeks, I try to get back to one or two of the people that I've written with in the past. And to me, it's really about the feel and the vibe. I mean, I think you want to write with better people and try to pull things out of yourself that that maybe weren't there or that you didn't think were there. But at the same token, I really enjoy writing with people that have the same mindset as me and that really enjoy the same type of music. I've been working with a lady, Ingrid McDonald, and her and I have written about 6 or 7 songs together. And a lot of it's very sort of old-timey, I mean, almost Leon Redbone, Gillian Welch vibes to it. Some of it's got more of a band vibe, and then we wrote what we thought was a nice acoustic Canadian anthem. So there's a lot of songs that I've been doing with her, and hopefully come springtime we'll get out and play together a little bit. And I would love to get some of those songs recorded. So it's really tough. I mean, I don't know if the next CD is just going to be a CD of collaborations, or but by the same token, I've been writing a lot myself. So I've got hundreds of songs sort of on the back burner that I'd love to get to. And having the home studio has been great because I've been able to flush out these songs and record them and track them and catalog them. And then it's going back and saying, okay, well, which ones, you know, do we want to really work on for a nice polished release? And things like that. But I think once I get the CD out, I really want to work with the CD with playing it as much as possible and promoting it and pitching songs, and we'll see where that goes. And then, like I said, come springtime or summer, you know, things have settled down a bit with the pandemic and business is opening up a bit. I'd love to get out and play. Steve, I really appreciate it, man. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, and okay, I can talk to you all day. So thank you so much.
I know. I think we sort of grew up in the same era when you started talking about dubbing cassettes, tapes, and stuff. That's you're talking about what I used to do. So we're probably in the same age bracket here.
It's funny. What a difference! Yeah, what a difference. I mean, talking with Fred. I mean, back in the old day, you make a mistake, that's it. You got to redo it. Now it's just copy and paste. You undo.
I know. Yeah, I've been fooling around with Audacity a fair bit, and I've learned a lot of those little tricks of just, you know, just editing really quickly. Taking out a wrong note or something on a solo. And
I was gonna say, I think it's great, but I think to some extent, I mean, it takes kind of some of the spontaneity and things out of it, and that's why I think why we are trying to get back really kind of doing stuff more live and longer dated and things like that.
That's it for today's episode featuring Stuart McKee. I'm Steve Todd, and thanks for listening to Musicians FAQ on 102.7 CKMS. See you next week.
Hi, it's Stuart McKee from Kitchener, and you're listening to 102.7 CKMS Radio Waterloo.ca.